Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 14 minutes or so, we're going to draw strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. This week, I'm talking about forgiveness. I cover forgiveness in the Big Topics section of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men because forgiveness is a big topic. It's big not just in the sense of being strategic, but also in the sense of being multifaceted. There are a lot of different aspects of forgiveness that I could examine, but today I'm going to focus on just one: why we forgive other people. The Bible passage for this episode is Colossians 3, 11 to 14. I'll read it from the ESV, the English Standard Version. Here there is not Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is all and in all. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and, if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other. As the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. Why should you forgive other people? Jesus gave us a very clear reason. If you don't, then you won't be forgiven. In Matthew 6, the disciples ask Jesus how they should pray, and Jesus gives them the Lord's Prayer. That prayer includes this statement on forgiveness: forgive us our debts, or trespasses, or sins, as we also have forgiven our debtors, or those who have trespassed or sinned against us. Jesus then adds this: for if you forgive others their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. That's pretty clear. Actually, it's starkly, painfully clear. But it's not the only reason to forgive. Lewis Smedes was a professor of theology and ethics at Fuller Theological Seminary who wrote several popular books, including one entitled Forgive and Forget. Over 40 years ago, he wrote a column in Christianity Today with this subtitle: to forgive is to set a prisoner free and discover that the prisoner was you. Smedes starts the piece with the obvious: you can't change your past. You're stuck with it and its effects on you. You can learn from it, but you can't escape it. You may forget it, but you can't undo it. You may be doomed to repeat it, but you can't change it. It's an inevitable component of your being. But God can release you from the grip of your past. You open the door to His power here when you forgive someone else. Smedes writes that there are three stages to your action of forgiving: suffering, spiritual surgery, and starting over. The first stage is suffering. Not every hurt needs to be forgiven, but when someone hurts you in a way that affects you deeply and morally, when someone is disloyal or betrays you, then you can't just ignore it or shrug it off. You are suffering as a result, and there's a wall between you and that person. The second stage is spiritual surgery. When you forgive someone who has truly hurt you, you perform spiritual surgery in your own memory. You slice away the wrong from the person who did it. You disengage that person from his hurtful act. Rather than seeing him as evil, you see him as a person weak in his needs. By recreating the person whose wrong made your past painful, you recreate your past. God does it this way too. He releases us from sin as a mother washes dirt from a child's face. The Bible's metaphors, such as the scapegoat, point to a surgery within God's memory of what we are. Sometimes this second stage is as far as we can go. Sometimes we need to forgive people who are dead and gone. Sometimes we need to forgive people who do not want our forgiveness. Sometimes our forgiving has to end with what happens in the spiritual surgery of our memories. But sometimes we get to experience the third stage, starting over. Here, you offer the forgiven person the opportunity at reconciliation, the chance to begin a fresh relationship with you. Forgiving turns off the recording of the painful memory. Forgiving sets you free. But it's not easy. Jesus knew that, but he also knew that doing the difficult work of forgiveness is not just important, but essential. He illustrates that in a parable in Matthew 18. A king settled accounts with his servants, including one who owed a ridiculously large sum, the equivalent of billions of dollars. There was no way the servant could pay even a small fraction of it, but the king had mercy and forgave the entire debt. As soon as he was forgiven, that servant found a man who owed him the equivalent of a few thousand dollars. When that man couldn't pay, the servant had him thrown in debtor's prison. Informed of this, the king summoned the servant. "You wicked servant," he shouted, "I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" The king threw the wicked servant in debtor's prison. "So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you," concluded Jesus, "if you do not forgive your brother from your heart." One of my favorite films on forgiveness is Spider-Man 3. I know, the film gets a bad rap. There are some cringy parts of this movie, such as Peter Parker becoming a weird emo dude who dances by himself. But the last 15 minutes make up for everything. In case you haven't seen the film, here's a quick plot summary. When a symbiote fuses with Peter's Spider-Man suit, it brings out the vengeful, selfish, and arrogant side of Peter's personality. While wearing the new suit, Peter locates Flint Marko, the man who killed his Uncle Ben, and Peter apparently kills Flint. The shift in Peter's personality alienates Mary Jane, and she finds solace with Peter's former best friend, Harry Osborn, who has adopted his father's persona as the Goblin. Peter battles Harry in a brutal fight that leaves Harry's face disfigured. Peter also exposes and humiliates Eddie Brock, a rival freelance photographer. When Peter finally realizes what the symbiote is doing and frees himself of it, the symbiote enters Eddie Brock, transforming him into Venom. Brock joins forces with Flint Marko, the Sandman, who survived Peter's attack, and the two vow to destroy Spider-Man. They're about to succeed when Harry arrives. Harry subdues the Sandman, but Brock gains the upper hand against Peter. Just as Brock is about to impale Peter with Harry's glider, Harry jumps in the way and is mortally wounded. Brock is killed, and then Flint Marko appears for a pivotal exchange with Peter.
"I didn't want this. But I had no choice."
"We always have a choice. You had a choice when you killed my uncle."
"My daughter was dying. I needed money. I was scared. I told your uncle all I wanted was the car."
"What is it?"
"I need your car."
"He said to me, 'Why don't you just put down the gun and go home?' I realize now he was just trying to help me. The when I saw my partner running over with the cash. And the gun was in my hand. I did a terrible thing to you. I spent a lot of nights wishing I could take it back. I'm not asking you to forgive me. I just want you to understand.
I've done terrible things too. I forgive you.
Flint Marko leaves. And Peter goes to check on Harry. He finds Mary Jane cradling Harry's head in her arms.
Hey, pal. How you doing?
Been better.
We'll get you through this.
No.
I should never have hurt you. Said those things.
None of that matters, Peter. You're my friend.
Best friend.
At Harry's funeral, Peter offers a final thought.
Whatever comes our way, whatever battle we have raging inside us, we always have a choice. My friend Harry taught me that. He chose to be the best of himself. It's the choices that make us who we are, and we can always choose to do what's right.
Next week, I'll look at another big topic, hope. Please join me for that. And please pick up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men. You'll find it to be a good resource on this journey. Have a good week, men.